Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Trump White House defies convention and often accepted facts right and left. And then the White House press secretary steps to the microphone. For Sean Spicer, it was too much. He lasted 6 months. His successor, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, looks immovable, like she's the wall. Whatever the challenge, some say she's Orwellian, all say she's tough. Where is the truth in all this? The informed public. This hour On Point, the president, truth, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You can join us on air where this conversation is always on. What do you make of Sarah Huckabee Sanders? Is she just doing her job? What's her responsibility to the president, to the American people? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Real or false, true or false, she goes to the Trump talking point. Here she was. This was last week after the president had retweeted videos from a British far-right group that were unverified, and many said that they were not accurately depicting the scenes there. Here was Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Whether it's a real video, the threat is real, and that is what the president is talking about. That's what the president is focused on, is dealing with those real threats. And those are real no matter how you look at it.
The president's view of the world. Joining us now from Washington is Major Garrett, chief White House correspondent for CBS News. He covered the White House during the Clinton, George W. Bush, Obama, and has covered, of course, the Trump administration. Major Garrett, great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom.
Also with us from Washington is Kathleen Parker, syndicated columnist for The Washington Post. You can find her piece, headline, Trump Built a Wall. Her name is Sarah, at our website, onpointradio.org. Kathleen Parker, welcome back to On Point to you as well.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be here.
What do you mean Sarah's the wall, Kathleen?
Well, she's impermeable. You know, we heard forever and ever that we were going to build the wall between the U.S. and Mexico. And the wall that we've wound up with is named Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And she is, you know, she's just there. She's I have to watch my descriptors here because I don't want to say anything physically insulting. But she is, you know, she provides a barrier, essentially, between the American public and the White House, rather than trying to inform reporters so that they can in turn inform the American people. She either doesn't respond to questions or she says ridiculous things such as, well, whether that's a real video or not, the threat is real, which is complete nonsense. And you know, it's a dishonest response. So I can't say that she's doing the job that she's supposed to do. She's just presenting herself as a wall that blocks information rather than helps disseminate it.
Major Garrett, we don't have to go physical in any way to observe that this is a very formidable person at the microphone. You've been in a lot of administrations now. You were there for the Sean Spicer months. Mm-hmm. Characterize Sarah Huckabee Sanders as a White House press secretary for us.
Well, she does the job that Sean Spicer was asked to do with much more gusto and much more self-confidence and much more self-possession. And there's a reason for that. I think Kathleen would agree. And watching the evolution of the White House televised press briefing, many a press secretary have found it to be more show than substance and have tried to figure out a way to maximize whatever the president says and does and minimize the bothersome and irritant or irritating questions that come from the White House press corps. And what this White House has done is sort of taken a cultural attitude toward the White House press briefing, which is it's for our audience and it's for our message. And anyone who disagrees with it or doesn't like it can leave or can be insulted or can be enraged, and we don't care. It is not a place where information is gathered. Now, not every White House briefing I covered in previous administrations was altogether that rich an atmosphere to gather information.
Yep.
But more often than not, you could at least glean a few things because there was a sense of give and take. There is no sense of give and take in this administration. There is only give. We give you what we want to give you, and that's it. And you can either like it or lump it. And you need a great sense of mission to do that from the podium of the White House and to do it with a sense of disregard for the idea of give and take with a free press and with the idea that this message is really only designed to reinforce that part of the country that already agrees with you. There is very little effort placed in this White House in the art of political persuasion. There is very great effort placed behind the concept of political sledgehammering, okay?
Yeah.
And this example that Kathleen pointed to about this very far right, very fringe, very extreme political figure in Britain representing a political party that's elected positively no one to any position, no matter how low or obscure in British politics, to have the President of the United States retweet three of those videos, all of which are conflated and represent a form of bigotry, meaning blame everyone for isolated or unverifiable acts of the few, to say, well, forget about the video, forget about the action of retweeting it, forget about what it means for America, our relationship with Britain, forget about what it means in terms of accuracy and representing the true beliefs of the White House and the administration behind it. There's a threat, and that's all we need to focus on. I mean, that is an amplification of a miniaturized message that obscures or seeks to obliterate a conversation about everything else that's relevant to what the president did and why, and simplify it into the most basic core fear-based concept imaginable. And the White House does that with a certain tenacity and a certain repetitiveness that is new to American politics.
And when you come right down to facts or to talking about what the president has said, Sarah Huckabee Sanders absolutely tenacious in presenting it the way she wants it presented. This was a few weeks ago when a reporter asked her about President Trump's repeated claim in the run-up to the tax bill. And we saw that went through the Senate late Friday, early Saturday. But here was this. The president has often said that we are the highest tax nation in the world. Overall, that's not true, though he said it plainly in just that way again and again. Here was the exchange with Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
The president repeated this claim in the Oval Office today, saying we're the highest tax nation in the world. Why does the president keep saying this? It's not true overall.
We are the highest taxed corporate tax in the developed economy. That's a fact.
But that's not what the president said.
That's what he's talking about. We are the highest corporate taxed country in the developed economies across the globe.
Sarah, so that's accurate, but the president keeps repeating this claim that we're the highest tax nation.
And that's what we are, the highest tax corporate nation.
But that's not what he said. He said we're the highest tax nation in the world.
The highest tax corporate nation. It seems pretty consistent to me. Sorry, we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Kathleen Parker, there's the wall, and that one is tough to scale, but the reporter's trying to make a concise point about what the president says very broadly again and again. You hear Sarah Huckabee Sanders' response. What's the implication of that kind of pivot and denial and rolling on for our political discourse, Kathleen?
Well, it certainly depends on which side of the aisle you're sitting. As a reporter, of course, you're looking for clarification, and all she has to – in her mind, obviously, she did clarify. She said this is what he meant to say. And by the way, she's not the first press secretary to have to clarify what the president
meant by what
he said.
Been around that block.
Yeah. But if you look at this from the perspective of just everyday Americans who are watching this – and by the way, I think we can say this is maybe the first time in history that the press briefing has become a destination.
It's popular. It's beating out soap operas.
People can't wait to watch the next episode. But, you know, if you're looking at it from that perspective, she's answering that question perfectly well, and the reporter's being obnoxious. So what does this say about our discourse going forward? It simply amplifies, I think, the division that we talk about all the time, that people really do perceive and see things in completely different ways when given and presented with the same set of facts. This is probably not the best example of Sarah obviating the truth, but yet it's you know, there would have been a simpler solution, I think, had she just said, well, look, I think he probably misspoke. What he meant was blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of the end of the story, instead of just digging in her heels and refusing to budge.
The thing is, Major, Donald Trump knows full well, I would think, the advantage of saying we're the highest taxed nation in the world.
Sure.
Which we are not even close to being. But that's a very big claim that could make a lot of people turn their heads and say, what?
Right.
What's the implication where she won't
go? About this, Tom. One, based on my 16 months on the campaign trail, more than 75 Trump rallies. And I interviewed sometimes casually, sometimes on camera, but always I would talk to Trump supporters at these rallies.
Yeah.
And I would have this conversation about things that he would say that were manifestly untrue. And what I would hear back repetitively was, yes, but you're missing the point. He's right about the larger truth. The larger truth about either illegal immigration, the larger truth about crime, the larger truth about the state of our economy, the larger truth about national security. And
larger truth.
The bigger concept, the bigger construct in their mind, which was either about anger or fear or some mixture of the two, or just generalized anxiety about their state of life, and the idea that Donald Trump as a candidate was speaking to issues in ways that whether or not he was factually moored at all was much less relevant to them than the idea that he was bringing to the fore a conversation they felt had either been ignored or diminished. And the larger construct about Donald Trump was really all they cared about. And because of that, they invested in him psychologically a level of trust that we're now seeing played out at the White House briefings. Because
Major, I get
these
that
are no
idea.
Longer contests about facts. Mm-hmm. They're about who do you trust and who's speaking to you and where do you place your trust in me as a member of the mainstream media or in Donald Trump. And for Trump supporters, it's not me, it's him.
I mean, I get the idea of a larger truth, but if it's not undergirded with fact, Kathleen, where do we end up?
And well, I'm not vouching for them. I'm just trying to explain.
No, I mean, I get it.
Major's exactly
I get it.
Right. He's exactly right. That's what people say. And I spend a lot of time with the indigenous peoples of South Carolina, so I do know how her is. Well, that's my
you're
joke
home.
Line.
Okay.
That's it for today. Okay.
All right.
No, but the key point, to get to your question, Tom, about what this means to our discourse is, When the facts don't matter, what the president has done is create an environment where the facts are nimble. They're not they can be anybody's interpretation. It's not important anymore what the facts actually are. And
Kevin, hold the thought. We're right up against the clock here. We'll come right back talking about presidential truth and Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Talking about presidential communication, this hour, presidential truth, and Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Major Garrett is with us, Chief White House Correspondent for CBS News. He's right in the thick of this every day. Kathleen Parker is here, syndicated columnist for The Washington Post. Her recent column headline, Trump Built a Wall. Her name is Sarah. There's a kind of respect there for just how formidable she can be at that microphone, but also some big questions about the impact of that formidable wall, as Kathleen Parker has it, between Americans and sometimes the facts. You can join us this hour. What is the truth ratio you're seeing coming out of the White House and the highest office in the land these days? And what do you think of the job that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is doing? Are you impressed, dismayed by her stone wall of rejection of challenges to questions about this White House, this president? Here's just a little compilation of exchanges with reporters. Sarah Huckabee Sanders right at the center.
Does the president regret this tweet? I mean, he came back twice yesterday.
April, I'm starting to regret calling on you first.
But
I'm
only telling you what Senate Republicans who are in a position to have to deal with is our
state. And I answered your question, and yesterday you probably saw a statement come out from here that that was more fake news from the Washington Post. And I know you'd love to report that we were misled, and we want to create... Hold on, Jonathan. I let you finish and read off every single one of those statements, so... unless you want to trade places, I think it's my turn now.
Okay, Sarah Huckabee Sanders going at it with White House correspondents there. And I think, Major, we heard you right in the middle of that.
Right.
I mean, her technique is, well, we'll talk about it. Backers, as you say, totally love it because it's just impossible to get around her. Critics, very tough. Frank Bruni wrote last month, for some 20 minutes every afternoon, down is up, paralysis is progress, enmity is harmony, stupid is smart, villain is victim, disgrace is honor, plutocracy is populism, and Hillary Clinton colluded with Russia. What is the technique here? And is it singular to Sarah, Major?
There are some aspects of the press briefing now that are singular. One, it's much shorter. 17 to 20 minutes is usually the maximum. And most press briefings I attended for every previous White House would go 40, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour and a half. I mean,
wow. Yeah.
If there was some heavyweight policy going on, and previous administrations were much more interested in talking about their policy, why they were doing certain things, and were willing to kick around different political arguments about why it was strong or perceived weaknesses and deal with that, mm-hmm. because that was part of the persuasive aspect of the White House briefing, if not for the nation, because the ratings weren't as they are now, at least within the construct of the Washington conversation, previous White Houses found that valuable. This White House simply does not. And Sarah's answers tend to be very rooted in the most basic and, as I said before, metaphorically sledgehammer type talking points and sound bites. And most reporters are allowed one or two, maybe three questions. I mean, you really have to be on your toes to get that third question in. And that is another appreciable difference. Most press secretaries, certainly for the correspondents in the first three rows, which tend to be the more experienced, more senior correspondents representing the largest news organizations, could get five, six, sometimes seven questions. Maybe it was a little bit too much at times. But that this administration doesn't truck that at all. One, two, or three, sometimes only one, usually just two, 20 minutes and out. And that makes it a much more compressed, much more compact, and much more talking point-driven experience for the White House and, sadly, for reporters. But just, Tom, real quick.
Yeah.
Anyone who's trying to understand and wrap their arms around this conversation must know this. No self-respecting White House correspondent would ever build their reporting day around the White House briefing and only the White House briefing.
Oh, yeah. No, we get that. We get that.
You know, I mean, it is always been the public relations aspect, then the most visible public relation aspect of the White House. And all your best reporting is done before and after and usually outside of the building. Then you bring information in and force people to tell you what's actually going on.
So why does it matter, Garrett? Because people at Major...
So it matters in a couple of respects. There's a transparency element. There is a respect of the process. And as I said, previous administrations thought this was a give and take and thought it was incumbent upon the White House to take all the incoming and take it with not only good humor, but a sense of respect for the process. This White House tends to think no. A lot of the questions are phonied up. A lot of the questions are based on gotcha premises that they don't even want to validate. And that giving it its due respect diminishes their ability to communicate with their supporters, not enhance it. And it's that general premise about what the value of the briefing is and how it should be most exploited that differentiates this White House.
Kathleen, Major sits there, listens, works with this, does his own outside reporting as well, like others, but he says what he hears in the press briefing is not facts, but and not even a traditional defense, let's say, of the president, but a cultural attitude. And you can feel that. You can hear it in her language. You can see it in her body language. This is the daughter of Mike Huckabee. She's been around politics a long time. Up out of Arkansas and very rooted there. What are the implications of bringing a cultural attitude rather than necessarily some kind of commitment to factual discourse to that podium, Kathleen?
Well, look, the culture is absolute contempt for the media. And President Trump obviously has spent a great deal of time trying to build this narrative that the media are not to be trusted. We're the enemy. We're we're the fake news propagators, etc. So why would anyone expect the press secretary to bring something other than that attitude to the room? Now, now, if she had come from the press corps, as so many previous press secretaries have, mm-hmm. I think you'd see something very different taking place. For one thing, there's this understanding of kind of mutual experience and goals. And there's – even though the press secretary might have might be seen as having crossed over to the dark side, he or she would be somewhat self-aware and humble and self-effacing and about that. So there's a collegiality when there's that shared experience. Moreover, the press secretary in that circumstance would understand more or less what the reporters are after. And if he can't give it to them, then, you know, there's a – everybody kind of accepts that too. It's just a – it's a different attitude altogether. And Major, having been in the room a lot more than I have, would probably be able to expand on that, I think.
I mean, Major, maybe you don't deserve collegiality. I mean, it's a White House, after all, not a clubhouse.
I don't want it. I mean, it is – there is an aspect, and I would be dishonest with – our listeners, if I didn't say, you get to know these people, you work around them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. In many cases, you travel the world with them. And so there's a proximity that creates, by its very professional nature, a familiarity. But familiarity doesn't necessarily mean collegiality or chumminess. Okay?
Well, may I say, I think what I meant to convey, okay. and maybe I can call Sarah to explain this. It's mutual respect.
Well, mutual respect is an enormously important part of this, and part of what is built into that is what's your premise about this level of engagement, and the premise is what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise is, more often than not, you're illegitimate. I don't need to deal with you. I don't need to fear you. And Tom, if I could pinpoint that for just a second, because I think this is an important structural shift. At least for this White House, and we'll see what it means in future White Houses. But this White House, from the very top, believes it won the presidency by not just criticizing and sort of mau-mauing the media, which previous presidential candidates who became president did, but of trying to obliterate and undermine the essential purpose of a free press and its level of accountability and its level of believability. And because of that, this White House, from the very top, and Sarah amplifies this in every way she can, communicates to the country through the briefing that the power structure has changed. We're no longer afraid, and we're not going to in any way be intimidated or knocked back by any question or any controversy, even one that we set in motion. And the president sets plenty of controversies in motion all by himself, oftentimes without consulting anyone in the White House.
Yep.
And they will look at that controversy and say, too bad. President set in motion, we are going to aggressively attack the questioners and as much as possible sidestep the substance of whatever the president set in motion. And part of that tactic is to say, you're illegitimate at your core, so we don't have to deal with your question as seriously as previous White Houses did. Most previous White Houses I've covered, all of them, in fact, had a sense of fear about that level of interaction and what power we could take away from the White House by asking a set of persistent and irritating questions. I don't think this White House has that fear.
It's kind of wild. There's been support from backers, outrage outside. This was Mika Brzezinski, MSNBC. Last week, after Sarah Huckabee Sanders had defended the president's contentious nickname for Senator Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, here was Brzezinski.
When is there going to be a moment where she actually says the president misspoke?
Wasn't there a...
What's wrong with her? Why does she do that job? How can she look in the mirror every day and say, I am doing the right thing for the American people? Because you are not. You are not. This is Kellyanne Conway territory. This is horrible. I'm not sorry. Go ahead, Joe. That is unbelievable. This is our president, and that is the spokesperson for the president of the United States.
It is.
Sitting there defending his racism, his bigoted language, his stupidity. This is where we are.
This is horrible, says Mika Brzezinski, but that's not how Sarah Huckabee Sanders sees it, and she is tough. Michael in Newburyport, Massachusetts, thanks for calling, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call.
Yep.
So Major just said that that they're not afraid. They're actually petrified. They're petrified of the truth, and it blows my mind.
You mean the White House is petrified of the truth? What's your evidence
Absolutely.
Of that? Okay.
Absolutely. And it blows my mind that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who basically is a sassy diner waitress type, who's always quick with the quip, how she shuts down these reporters. Now, I'm not saying this is an easy job. Never done it. But you know there's going to be a briefing. If you ever watch these press conferences, as soon as the question is answered, you can predict her response.
Yeah.
And the
unmoving
obsequiousness of the press corps blows my mind, and it leads one to believe that there is a collusion of sorts. And I see this all the time on the panel shows, where here's the deal, guys. We'll sort of ask a tough question. We'll let you go with the spin. Just continue to let us have the access. If you can't go rhetorically toe-to-toe with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you don't belong in the room.
I mean, but does Major Garrett sound obsequious to you here today, Michael? I think he's describing things.
Absolutely not today, and that's the killer. Because I will watch people on a 4 p.m. panel show,
yeah,
who have just been on a 3 p.m. briefing. They ask a question and they just let her slide to the next questioner. I want to hear the reporter say, "Sarah, I'm not going to take your question until you answer his question."
Major, jump in here. What do you say to that, Major? I'm sure you're listening very attentively.
I am. And it wouldn't be the first time that I've been accused of being obsequious or obnoxious. And, you know, I've had to live with both adjectives throughout my career as a White House correspondent. And I appreciate Michael, I believe, is the caller's perceptions. His perceptions are real. They're valid to him. And I can understand where he's coming from.
You think the press corps is obsequious?
I would say this idea that there's collusion for access that is always a construct that I think viewers and consumers of news, especially about the White House, have always worried about.
Yeah.
And I think in previous administrations that was a relevant conversation. In this one, it is simply not. They don't trade anything. They're not access traders.
Then what about the kind of challenging that Michael wants to hear in those briefings chewing over that comes after?
So there's always this fine line in the briefing, and Michael can have his preference for prosecuting attorneys. And I've challenged Sarah Huckabee Sanders many times, and I've gone back with her to try to extract a new appreciation of a fact or something the president said that conflicts with what he's now saying, and we've gone round and round. And I've also taken up the task when she has completely ignored questions that my other colleagues have asked that I thought were relevant to that day's news cycle.
Yep.
I've put my own prepared questions aside and followed up simply on behalf of a colleague. And we've all begun to do that more frequently.
But could the press be tougher? Could it just be tougher? I mean, Billy Bush is writing today in the Times. And, of course, he lost his job in the Access Hollywood scandal. The president with his comments about grabbing women's genitals there, comments that he apparently is now floating may have been doctored. But Billy Bush says, no way that was doctored. Lots of people witnessed that. Lots of people heard it. But here's what he says in his essay in the Times. He says that Donald Trump has a strategy of, he says, getting away with lies. He says people will just believe you. You just tell them and they believe you. If that's if that's the Trump view, where's the leverage for the American press to get around it?
Well, the leverage is many ways, and the briefing is one of those levers. And the other levers are other persistent coverage of things, for example, that the White House didn't want anyone to figure out on Friday about Michael Flynn, who told Michael Flynn to engage with the UN. A lot of us, myself included, stormed the ramparts and made 1,000 calls and talked to lots of people and bore down on sources and found out it was Jared Kushner. And then we wanted to find out who directed Michael Flynn to talk to the Russian ambassador about sanctions. And do you think anyone at the White House or his legal team was trying to help with that? Mm-hmm. Of course they weren't. And what did we do? We stormed the ramparts. We made calls. We worked a tremendous number of sources. That was one of the hardest days I've had in this job in many years to get as close to the verifiable truth of that day as humanly possible. And we did. Not all of us, but I did. That's the other way you do it. And the one thing about Trump that people are experiencing, that I experienced during the campaign,
yeah,
is there is an exhausting quality to Donald Trump, and there is a sort of 7 or 8 or 9 fire hoses all at once quality to Donald Trump. And you want a prosecutor to prosecute every single thing he says or does that is askew with the facts when there are 9 other fire hoses
mm-hmm,
coming at you?
Mm-hmm.
Take my seat. Try it for a day.
Kathleen, are you glad to be watching from South Carolina, not sitting in there every day with that responsibility?
Well, I often watch from Washington, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
But no, I've never felt that. I mean, it's not my job to be in that room.
Mm-hmm.
As Major said, I mean, most of what we do in the reporting world is, you know, you pursue your own sources and you don't expect to get much usable information from the press briefing itself. Most of what I learn about Washington takes place after hours, primarily. It's a very weird workplace here.
But we've tried to think of it as a fact-based republic. We've had our ideals, we've had our cultural ideals, I suppose, as well. But the fact-based notion has been pretty fundamental to this country over the long haul, Kathleen.
Yes, and I have an anecdote for you on that subject when we get back.
We'll come right back to it. Kathleen Parker, please stand by with the Washington Post. Major Garrett with CBS News. We're talking about truth, the president, and the White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Trump, truth, and Press Secretary, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She is unflappable at the microphone, first mother to hold the position of White House Press Secretary. This was back in July. She was responding to a question about Anthony Scaramucci's very short 10-day stint as White House Communications Director. That led to Sean Spicer taking off. Her kids, she said, are more chaotic than the White House.
If you want to see chaos, come to my house with 3 preschoolers. This doesn't hold a candle to that. Just to be clear, that's not an open invitation to come to my house. But if you guys want to schedule babysitting time, I'll be happy to work that out.
You can join us this hour. Do you marvel at how Sarah Huckabee Sanders volleys back with zero hesitation at her steely defense of a Trump worldview? Is she just doing her job? And what is her responsibility to the American people here? Is the company the country operating these days on the basis of truth? Major Garrett is here, Chief White House Correspondent for CBS News. Kathleen Parker is here, syndicated columnist, The Washington Post. Martha Joint Kumar joins us in just a moment. You had an anecdote you were sharing on truth something more.
I wanted to tell you about this just briefly. It illustrates the notion that facts don't matter and how Trump – and I think we have to keep reemphasizing this – at how serious and dangerous it is that the president has created this environment where the facts don't matter and anybody is entitled to their own set of truths. And so to that to that point, when during the campaign, when Ted Cruz and Trump were vying for the votes of Nevada voters. They were going to the rural areas. And, of course, the big issue in rural Nevada is federally owned land. The federal government owns 84% of Nevada. So Trump said, yes, Cruz said, yes, okay, he would get some of that land back to the rural farmers.
Yep.
And Trump said he would not. Okay, so fast forward, Trump wins Nevada, in those rural areas at least. And so he goes the Cruz people go into those communities where they had campaigned and conducted a survey to try to find out what had happened. And they pointed out that it was Trump who said he would not help them with this issue, and it was Cruz who said he would. And they said, no, Trump didn't say that. And they said, well, we have it on video. So they show a video of Donald Trump saying, no, he would not get them their land back. And the people said, well, that's just not accurate. That's been doctored. That film is not true. So, I mean, to that extent.
But we're talking about this today, Kathleen, on the day that Bears Ears is losing its monument status, Escalante losing its monument status. I mean, maybe were they hearing something that you weren't?
I'm sorry, I missed that, Tom.
We're talking about public lands in the West, and this we're talking about on a day when he's visiting there, and we've got two big public monuments, public chunks of public land losing their monument status or being very much reduced from what it was. So maybe they were hearing something that wasn't stated.
Well, maybe
or was
so.
Stated the other way.
Maybe so, because, you know, Trump's voters do know what he means, and they don't seem to care whether he said one thing or another. It's up to their understanding of things. And, you know, once you get to that point, then you can believe anything. And that's the danger. That's the sort of existential danger of this president, is that if people are willing to believe anything, then where does he take them?
Tom, we should just pause for a second and just remind ourselves that Lyndon Johnson lied about the Vietnam War. Richard Nixon lied about the Vietnam War. Ronald Reagan lied about Iran-Contra. There were a great deal of either intentional or very close to intentional deceptions about what was at risk in Iraq with the Iraq War.
Yes.
Our government has played fast and loose with the truth about life and death situations, large and small, for a good part of my lifetime. And one of the interactions that is most important to that is a aggressive and curious and persistent press corps and a White House that at least has some notion of an orientation to truth. But even those who represented that they did in conspicuous ways in our history did not.
Are you saying it's all the same then, Major?
No.
I'm just saying that we can't talk about this subject or give ourselves this glossy notion that fundamental, permanent, religious commitment to the truth has been a fundamental concept of every previous occupant.
We got that. But if there's a significant difference in degree, that's a big deal. Kathleen, forgive me, but
it is a difference in degree, and it's a difference in repetitiveness and the sort of bludgeoning of it. And that is a different factor.
But one of the most important differences, and Major needs to accept some credit for this, is that with those presidents, and going back to Vietnam and the Pentagon Papers and so on, the American people trusted journalists and the institutions of journalism more than they do now. And so when the Washington Post broke a story about Watergate, for example, the American people said, well, you know, this is horrible. They took in the information, they accepted it as fact and as truth. They don't do that now, no matter what we put out there. You can present all the facts you want, and they still won't buy it.
It's pretty wild. I want to bring Martha Joint Kumar in, political scientist, scholar, historian, focuses on the White House presidential press relations, communications operations, spends most days at the White House at press briefings very regularly, been doing it since the 1970s. Martha Joint Kumar, thank you very much for being with us. Emeritus Professor of Political Science at Towson University. Martha, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Is there something different in kind, or is it just degree? Is it something we should, have our antenna way, way up on here or not?
Yes, and that is the president. That we have a president who is has a different view of what he should be doing, how he should communicate. He sees himself as the most important communicator. And he does it in so many different ways. This morning, for example, he had four tweets, and those were added up to, through from January 20th, 2,291. And that is a lot for Sarah Sanders to have to deal with.
That's a lot of tweets. The Washington Post has got him up over 1,600 in its count of false and misleading claims. Not that every tweet is one, but somehow there's a lot out there.
That's right, and one tweet may have two or three.
That's true, true.
I think one of the things that's been perhaps missing in the discussion is that the president is different from his predecessors in that he has wanted to answer to his base and really not broaden it out to be president of all of the people. And so you see him working for that base, and he wants his press operation to reflect it. And that is what Sarah does. She represents him both in what he wants said and how he wants to say it.
Is that legit, a kind of a cultural revolution there, or is that derailing the republic because it counts on facts over time? How do you look at it, Martha?
I think in her job of representing the presidents, that's what press secretaries have done historically. But I think his view of playing only to your base is certainly different from the predecessors that that I've watched.
Let's go to Reggie in Oskaloosa, Iowa, if we can. Reggie?
Tom.
Hi, Reggie. You're on. What do you see?
Well, Garrett just did a perfect example of why I think the media is biased. He named four examples of presidents lying. Three of them were Republicans. Left out the fact that Clinton lied about his relations in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Obama and Hillary both lied about Benghazi. And the media went along with those lies and actually helped promote them instead of holding those people accountable. Harvard just did a study where 80% of Trump's coverage is negative. CNN was over 93% negative coverage. So I can see why she would walk in thinking that is a hostile work environment when they used to give Obama a standing ovation when he walked into a press conference.
So it looks like media bias at the heart of this to you, Reggie.
Well, I personally discovered it February 27th, 1991, watching Wolf Blitzer cover the Gulf War because I was there and I saw what he was saying was a lie.
Reggie, let us take your point. To Major, what about it? Media bias. She walks into a hostile environment. It's you know, it's not open to her, her view, her president. You hear Reggie's complaint?
I do, and I think that's part of this conversation that cannot be discounted. Those who support the president, and even those who are on the fence about the president but may have supported him in the election and are sort of watching how this all plays out, I hear this a lot on my social media feed and through emails. They think the coverage of the president is relentlessly and unnecessarily persistently hostile.
I mean, what do you think? You worked at Fox. You work at CBS.
Well,
you got range.
Sure. And let me tell you about the conversations I have with people who work on behalf of the president, mm-hmm. who would like more attention devoted to the things they're working on. For example, whether you disagree or agree, at the EPA, a lot of big changes are going on with the regulatory framework dealing with the environment. Same thing at the FCC, mm-hmm. same thing at the Federal Trade Commission, mm-hmm. same thing at the FDA. There are significant policy changes being put in motion at these very important regulatory agencies. These people who are doing them believe there's a story to be told there about freeing up the American economy and philosophically moving in a free market direction and letting people innovate and create. That's their perspective. They wish they could have a chance to tell that story. What they tell me, I'm not speaking on their behalf or imagining what they think. What they tell me is, I wish the president would give us a chance to breathe and tell our story and have somebody have time to look at what we're doing. But all he does is create all of these other issues, controversies, tweet storms, and other sort of dust in the air about what he's thinking or doing whenever he whimsically wants to tell the world he's thinking or wants to do something. And the hard work of government that we're doing on his behalf and on behalf of his supporters gets shunted aside because there's this necessary focus on all the controversies the president is creating. I'm not saying that. People who work on his behalf, who believe in their agenda, wish that they could get some time in the public sphere, and they believe it's the president who at times denies that ability to them.
Rebecca in South Norwalk, Connecticut. Rebecca, you're on. What do you see?
Hi, Tom. Here's my question.
Yeah.
All I hear throughout the conversation is how things were done. Back 20 years ago, we listened to this. Back 20 years ago, we did this. Three years ago, it was that.
Yeah.
Why don't we accept the fact that things have changed? And what is the press corps doing to go with that change and change the game for the press?
What do you mean by that, Rebecca? I mean, one of the things that's being asserted here today is that in this administration, facts don't matter. Should reporters just adjust to that? Is that what you're saying? Just accept that or something else?
No, I think a previous caller made the point, too, of, like, how can the press get together to combat it? And what are they doing when Sarah Huckabee, you know, makes a comment and they just let it go? And I think what happens is we've just sort of committed to ourselves that, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. You know, whatever we want to say about Trump and his administration, he's a lunatic, whatever the case may be. But we're still not going and kind of trying to find ways around the situation.
Yeah, Rebecca, I've got it. Martha, jump in here. I mean, I can imagine that makes Major grind his teeth. He's in there, you know,
And it should. I think you've had terrific reporting. I think you've had terrific reporting in this administration. But that doesn't mean that everybody, they have to get their information from the briefing.
Well, and they as Major points out.
That's right. It's a small part of it. And look at the coverage coverage that the New York Times have had and the Washington Post on so many aspects of the administration and what is going on in EPA and elsewhere.
But in fact, drowning in the Trump bathtub here, or do we just see a different perspective and, you know, we roll on just fine, Martha?
Well, if you look at the president's popularity, it has been at historic lows for any administration. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with the feeling that he's been looking backwards and not looking forwards to policy, but settling old scores and trying to blame others for the mistakes that they have had.
Mike in Laurinburg, North Carolina. Mike, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, Tom. I want to say hello to my friend down in South Carolina.
Kathleen.
From North Carolina.
All right. In Washington today, but yes.
So, Major, I see him a lot on CBS, and one of his friends, Mr. Dan Rather, is going to be here in the North State us for a meet and greet, and I look forward to seeing him. But my question, it's not so much a question, it's a response. Sarah Huckabee is doing what is, of course, being asked of her by the administration. Unfortunately, she does not have the scruples to say, my integrity means more to me than, having this job. And if Sean Spicer didn't show her what, you know, could be the end result of somebody using you like a paper towel and then throwing you away after they've used you, I mean, nothing else will.
I think she's tougher than Sean Spicer. No disrespect, but I think she's tougher.
Sean
looked like he was about to have a nervous breakdown because he knew he was lying and he didn't. I don't think it suited him.
Where do you think it goes, Mike? Our time is short.
Okay. Sarah Huckabee's father is a minister, evangelical pastor.
Mm-hmm, sure.
How can she and how can he allow her to degrade herself in front of the American people? And she says she's got three kids. What is she going to tell her kids? I lied for the president that I put my self-respect and my integrity at the low just for a job? And what would her father? I mean, what he's supposed to be a minister on TBN.
Mike, we got it. Kathleen, an ethical issue here that ends up mattering? Or is it just politics and the defense of the day and on we go?
Well, I think, look, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is doing a great job if you're President Trump. She's doing a fantastic job if you're one of his supporters. Sean Spicer, as I said, was just he looked like he was on the verge every day because he knew he was lying. And I think it did eat at him. It does not eat at Sarah because I think what especially evangelical Christians can do is say, look, I'm doing this for the good of the country. I believe in that. And I'm going to do what is necessary to lead the country in the direction that this president thinks it should go.
Well, she is the wall, as you say, for now anyway. And what an interesting character. Ramifications could be big. Kathleen Parker at The Washington Post, thank you for being with us today. Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent for CBS News, our thanks to you as well. And Martha Joint Kumar at Towson University, wonderful to have you with us as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.